Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
It's not just a matter of getting the work done and executing and making deadlines and all of that and so forth and performing, but it's really about how. It's the how you interact with people, how you make them feel, how you make them, how your conduct, what you say resonates with them. This does not mean that you have to be all super emotional or anything like that, although I tend to be, I think, a little bit on the gushy side, but I'm very open now. And I think this is because it's three decades later and I'm able now to say at the same time that I'm being very appreciative to someone of the work that they've been doing, I can also say to them, there is this one little thing I just wanted to mention. Would you be open to talking about it? And it's the combination of these things coming together. That's real astuteness, is being able to put those pieces together.
Today, we're going to go from cringeworthy communicator to compassionate collaborator. That's the arc of today's conversation with Jenny Bodian. Jenny built her career on flawless execution. She was the one person people trusted to get things done and get them done quick. But one brutally honest moment changed everything. Sitting in her boss's car after a vanilla performance review, she heard the words that no leader ever wants to hear. Her boss said, "Jenny, sometimes when you speak, I cringe. And if you don't change, it could be career ending." That feedback could have broken her. Instead, it became the catalyst for transformation, from being known for results alone to becoming a leader who communicates with clarity, listens with empathy, and collaborates for impact. If you ever believed that results are enough to carry you forward, Jenny's story is going to make you think again. Jenny Bodian White is a business strategist, executive coach, and expert in internal and executive communications, as well as employee engagement. Her remarkable career spans 35 years, primarily as a business leader in the pharmaceutical space. In her work as an executive coach, Jenny supports the client's journey toward deep learning, encouraging experimentation, to create the most robust and enduring tools for success. Jenny holds a BS from the United States Military Academy at West Point, an MBA from University of Michigan, and an executive coaching certification from Columbia University. She's a published author and coaches formally and informally around effective personal communication, which is why her story today is so interesting. She lives in Southbury, Connecticut with her husband, Kat Finnegan, and Black Lab Oakley. Jenny, welcome to Transformation Unfiltered today. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I am really looking forward to unpacking this conversation together. We had a couple of early conversations, and I know our readers are really going to appreciate what you have to say. So why don't we get right into it? We talk about mistakes and messy moments, but that's not where it ends. So why don't you drop us in the tough part?
I was in my first real business position after serving in the Army. And I was working for a marketing firm that was not tiny, but not large either. It was about 100 employees. And I was doing project management at that point. And I had a wonderful boss who I just looked up to so much. And she was a warm, kind person, but also all business. And I just learned a lot from watching her. And so one day she said to me, it was review time, and she said, "Let's go out to lunch." So we had lunch and we talked about what's gone really well and some areas that need attention and this sort of thing, very normal of what if a leader would do. And now we get in the car and we're headed back to the office. And at this point, she took a deep breath and she said to me, "I want to share something with you and I want to be honest. And when we are in meetings, there are moments where you talk or you speak and I cringe. I just have to tell you that if you do not learn how to communicate in a more diplomatic and respectful manner, it will end your career. And this was a big deal for me. I had always wanted a career. I always wanted to be the woman walking through the airport in the blue suit with the briefcase and the phone and running to the next plane to go to the next meeting. And that is exactly the life I wanted. And to hear that I was derailing myself was definitely had my head spinning at that moment.
I can only imagine. You just finished a nice lunch. You think, hey, we're on the ride home. What more could there be? Take me back to that very moment. You hear those words come out of her mouth. And what's happening for you on the inside?
I think because I'd had great success getting the projects executed. Like, we had very complex pieces of business. One of the pieces was with General Motors. We had all five divisions. So lots of politics. It was very intense. And because I was making strides with getting those business objectives accomplished, it hadn't occurred to me that there was another issue here in the background. And when she said the word cringe, that's a powerful word. And I don't even know if I've really ever heard it very often since then. And so that was a shocker. Meanwhile, you're in a moving car. It's not like you can jump.
Yeah, you can't just jump out and be like, I'm going to take a fall here.
But, and then when she went on to say that she felt it would end my career, that really, you know, just stopped me in my tracks. And I didn't have much to say in response. And we pulled into the parking lot. I don't remember what happened after that. It was a conversation that here we are decades later, and I remember it.
Yeah. And this woman, you said, was a boss you greatly admire, someone who you really respected. This was your regular review time. And this was not something unusual to have a review, but the message you received was not something you were expecting.
No.
In those moments, in that particular moment, let's just say you get into the parking lot, decide what to do next. Walk me through that.
I think she had also, if I'm remembering right, picked a Friday. So by the end of the day, I was pretty exhausted, I think, and already like the wheels are turning and how is this possible? And not only am I getting this feedback, but I'm getting this feedback from somebody I greatly admire. And I went home for the weekend and licked my wounds. I'm quite certain of that. And I think the first question I had coming off of the discussion and coming back into the work week was, certainly this can't be true. What if this made
a little denial action happening?
Yes, exactly. And one of the first things I thought of was to make the rounds of other senior leaders and do some informational interviewing and see what reaction I got from those individuals without mentioning her and that scenario per se. But what was interesting was that by the time I was done with those eight or so conversations, it was pretty clear that this was a trend. And the realization that I was probably alienating not only my coworkers, but my boss, other senior leaders, perhaps clients, this was not good. This was really not good. And still licking the wounds. And still thinking, how in the world do I rethink this and rethink my style and how I approach people, how I communicate?
So when you think about hearing the words come out of this person's mouth, it seemed like you were very proud of having the track record of getting projects over the line.
Yes.
So getting stuff done. And then when she said, hey, there are moments in meetings and you speak and I cringe. Then went on to say this could be career ending for you. How did you get to that place? What do you think led up to that very moment that she was noticing that maybe was a blind spot for you up until then?
I think it wasn't disrespectful. And that was established when I did my informational interviewing. It wasn't that, thank God, I wasn't cutting people down or being awful to someone. It was more the directness and being so focused on the end game and where we were getting with the project and pushing things forward, that I just could be very direct. And the more I listened to things that were coming out of my mouth, the more I realized that this was really like in your face a little bit. And I think what was particularly important about it was that I didn't want to lose the execution part. It had become my calling card even already in those early days. Throughout my career, one of the things that was a hallmark of my work was the ability to get stuff done. And of course, the key, though, is how you get that stuff done. And I had to now, on top of managing business of the complex clients, I had to really start to think about how do I undo this and redo this and reinvent myself a little bit.
When you think about the things that you, if you were going to say, I am, and you fill in the blanks about this kind of professional before this advice, what would have been the words that you used to describe your value add, your offer?
Let's see. Results oriented. I was the type A of the type A. Yeah, that's probably it. And it's so funny because when we were talking the other day, you were talking about the fact that when we knew each other, which was years later, I was much more gentle in my delivery.
It was never my experience of you, what you're describing now, this overly direct to the point of the what, not the how.
Yeah.
So today, how would you describe yourself, let's say, instead of results-oriented, driven, type A of type A? You mentioned you had to figure out how to do things a little differently. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to how you describe your approach now.
Still driven. That hasn't changed, but I have much more of an awareness of the people that are around me. And it is, in my experience, almost like very unlikely that you have to solve a difficult situation. Maybe there's some personalities involved or whatever, that you have to resolve all that in the moment. In many cases, it's better to just take a day or two and tell, and if you can share that with others too, hey, let's all just take a moment and kind of think this through together and where we need to go next. So the words that I would use are still driven. I'm still getting the job done. I'm still executing, which is, like I said earlier, my calling card. But at the same time, it's a much more gentle execution. I almost never lose my temper. I can't remember the last time I did or had to walk out of a room and you know how it is. The more that is at stake in the scenario, the more intense it gets. And I worked for a short period of time as a consultant in the mergers and acquisition space. And that was super intense. So there were times that I had to figure out with finesse how to deliver the message to be firm if I needed to be, but at the same time to deliver that message diplomatically with negotiation skills so that everyone in the room felt like they were coming out of it in a positive way. Much, much more complex skill set than simply like directly delivering a message.
Yeah, it's hard for me to get a picture of how directness, as I experience you talking right now and this matter of fact, but warm conversation. Can you help me to, if I was a fly on the wall, what were the career ending things that were giving your boss the cringe moments? What would I have noticed if I had seen you before this reflection?
I remembered one in particular where even I was getting like a little, I might be too heavy-handed in this. Yeah. We had General Motors in the room and all five divisions. And this was at that time, there were five divisions. And there was a side conversation going on. And I directed these clients basically to the center of the conversation to let's get going, let's keep moving, et cetera, et cetera. And I look back and I think to myself, good grief, I was this young woman. I was so inexperienced. And these are very weathered, very sophisticated clients who had seen a lot and done a lot in the automotive industry. And here I am, this whippersnapper. But I was bold. I just rushed forward and didn't really worry about that too much. But it didn't help me. It wasn't a behavior that served me. And in coaching now, that's a question I often ask. Is this behavior serving you? So it's all fine and good that you do X and Y, but is that getting you or your team or the organization to where you need to be? And that's the bigger question.
Sure. And what were the costs of doing that? So maybe there was an answer, this serves me in this regard, but what were the costs of that particular moment for you?
In that particular moment, I do think I did sense a little bit of annoyance in the room. And that's something you never want with your clients ever. So that was not a good moment. I think the other thing that happened too was I developed a reputation within the 100 employees that worked for this marketing firm that people weren't so sure they wanted to work for me. And I changed jobs at one point to work on a different project. And it was actually a promotion for me. It was great. But at the same time, the team that came with that project was very concerned. There were several people in that group who later I found out were really voicing concern. And it was the current team that I had and that I had led that I think reassured them a little bit. But still, not the way you want to start a new project with a new group of people.
Yeah. And people, I think we're at the center of both of these costs. One, you've annoyed some people that you're really there to serve, your client.
For sure. For sure.
And who knows what's behind those feelings of annoyance, but it could lead to all kinds of outcomes that probably weren't what your intention was. And then also, people don't want to work with me potentially. Yikes.
Mm. Yikes.
And people are part of getting big projects done. So you went, you talked to people. Sounds like you were licking your wounds and maybe hoping to have people say what?
Oh, it's the boss's imagination.
You're perfect. No, yeah. I appreciate
that.
You're
just great the way you are.
You go to one interview, you get a little bit of data and you're like, oh, that's another person. No big deal. Go to the next one.
Yeah.
Tell me how that kind of unfolded. How did the reality start to settle?
It was interesting because I think people did trust me in the sense that when I started those conversations and I said, I really am here to listen and to hear what you have to say, people believed me. So I think there was a trust factor. I think people knew that I was as good as my word. And I started to hear, and of course, these were, again, more sophisticated and further along in their career professionals who were able to, in their own way, be direct and so forth, but also be kind and not cut me to pieces, which I think in other industries, other places, it might have been worse. But here, it was a family-owned company, and people were just great. I look back at that, and I think of a gift. Not only did my boss give me a gift, but the people that I worked with and other senior leaders gave me a gift as well.
What made you willing to receive this information at this point?
Maybe my own suspicion that I wasn't doing so hot. I have a really high level of empathy and picking up on cues, which is really odd for somebody who's really direct, but the two things do seem to live together. And I think by the time I was in the third discussion, I think I was suspecting that this was probably true. And things, I looked back suddenly on family conversations and whatnot. And it all started to settle together. And I thought, okay, I think it's time that I pay attention to what's going on here.
What I like about what you just said is as you observe yourself in a way and start to get information, it's not necessarily just your work self. Maybe there's things in other parts of your life where this thing is cropping up or you have some additional evidence. And it sounds like you took the high level 30,000 foot view and we're like, oh, I can see where that creeps in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a good one. I had been right around this time, I had been fired from family board games.
Oh, interesting. Fired from family board games.
I'm still not sure if I could get in on one or not.
Okay. I might know someone in my life that might have been fired from family board games too. So how did that go down? That's another messy moment. And is it tied to this exact behavior?
Yeah. My sister in particular, I think, we were playing this board game and I just get uber competitive. And finally, everybody was like, that's it. We're done. You're out of here.
Well, it was the family board game instead of getting fired from this particular job. It sounds like you made the recovery. So what are the big lessons that this drive home from lunch catalyzed for you?
I think first, the part about the how, right? It's not just a matter of getting the work done and executing and making deadlines and all of that and so forth and performing. but it's really about how. It's the how you interact with people, how you make them feel, how you make them, how your conduct, what you say resonates with them. This does not mean that you have to be all super emotional or anything like that. Although I tend to be, I think, a little bit on the gushy side, but I'm very open now. And I think this is because it's 3 decades later. And I'm able now to say at the same time that I'm being very appreciative to someone of the work that they've been doing, I can also say to them, there is this one little thing I just wanted to mention. Would you be open to talking about it? And it's the combination of these things coming together. That's real astuteness, is being able to put those pieces together. So that's the first thing, I think.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our accelerated transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or by email and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show.
Yeah, the both empathetic, which I heard empathy and diplomacy there, and direct. So the combination of empathy and directness go hand in hand. And a lot of times our minds want to say, if you're too direct, then you have to be completely indirect. And here I'm hearing that there is a certain balance that can be a special sweet spot for you.
One of the things I also learned in that whole scenario in that time frame was how different people are. And you really, if you're going to be really successful as a leader, you have to lead and meet that person where they are. So now there are times when I look at someone who's either on my team or a rising star or a member of the team in some capacity. And I look at the person and I think about a piece of feedback that would be valuable for them. And I think, no, they're not ready. They don't want to hear it. And I can even try. I can even say, I've noticed something. I was wondering if you'd want to talk about it. And all of a sudden, the person disappears and they don't want to talk about it. And so there's no sense in beating someone over the head or delivering something that is going to fall on ears that are not open to hearing it or ready. That's a big thing. Is the person really ready to self-evaluate?
Yeah. And it's interesting. I'm glad that you bring that up because you said meet people where they are. And I'm not necessarily sure that your boss met you where you were in that moment. Do you think she did?
Yeah, I think she knew how I ticked. We had worked together for probably at least 2.5 years by that point. And she had a great style about her. And I really looked up to her. And I think she knew that I could take it and that it would make me better if I could take it, think about it, you know, chew on it a little bit, and then start to think about how do I right the ship? And sometimes righting the ship is not an immediate thing. It takes a little while. And as we know from coaching, behavioral change of an adult person is very challenging. So I would say it took me the better part of 4 or 5 years. Obviously, there were some initial wins that kind of got me into a safer space when I communicated, but to learn nuance, to learn negotiation, right, where it's not you only benefiting from the agreement, it's others benefiting as well, so that everyone feels like they've benefited from that agreement and that it's a win. That I think that takes sophistication, and it means that you really have to try diligently to read and to be having the conversations about this subject and being open about it so that people can give suggestions and also be happy for you when you make a step forward. And that always felt great too while I was with that organization. I would do something with more diplomacy, and the other senior leader in the room would say, that was nicely done.
Oh.
And that became like a group project a little bit.
I love it. You had your team of leaders. I want to circle back on a couple of things. There's two paths we could take here with the interview, but maybe more. But there's two that I really want to dig into. Are you okay with that?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's circle back to meeting people where they are in the line of thinking that you were going with feedback. I know that so many people that I talk to really have feedback they want to give. They must give this feedback. It's burning them. It's eating them up inside, but they just don't even know how, or they don't know how to meet a person where they are. Talk to me a little bit about the skills that you bring to the table to meet someone where they are.
I think a lot of listening is the first skill, and asking the right questions to understand where the person is, as we alluded to. So if the person is, let's just pick a behavior, they're losing their temper every 5 minutes and storming out of meetings and all kinds of things like that, that's not behavior that's going to help them. And so you might have this burning desire, especially I find if it's someone that I've mentored or coached or whatever, I often
have a stake, skin in the game for them.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I often want to say to them, can I share this with you? So I start with questions that sort of open, see if the door will open. I think that's the big thing. And then to have the discernment to know whether this is a time where you want to share this with the person or not.
I love that. I think that you're getting clues all the time. You're mm-hmm. listening to their words. You're probably listening to their tone. You're asking them questions. What does that mean? And then you even ask a question that helps you to test if there's openness, which is, can I share something with you? What happens if somebody's no? What do you do?
You let it go. Yeah, you let it go. And I think there's another aspect to this as well, in the sense that sometimes you are not the right person to deliver the feedback. And I've experienced that a number of times in my career where, for whatever reason, the peer, the teammate, whoever it was, I was wanting to share this feedback, because especially if it's something that you've really worked on, you really want to share what you've learned. And I remember a couple of times, for whatever reason, these people had, a few of them had not taken a shine to me. And so it's pretty clear at that point that you're not the person to deliver the feedback. And then it becomes a question of, how important is this? And is it going to end their career? And who could you share that with in terms of feedback, who is going to be effective in delivering that for that person?
One thing that stands out to me is you said something about you want to give this feedback, you want. Mm-hmm. And then later you said for this person. So I think there's something here about, who's this feedback for anyway? Is it to make you feel good, or is it to really serve that person? And I think that what I'm hearing from you is there's a lot of non-attachment to how it makes you feel. It's more about what's good for them in the best circumstances.
Exactly. Yeah. And some topics too are just not worth it. It's a small thing. I think where the boss that gave me the feedback, this was a big thing. How you communicate is almost got to be one of the top few things that make you successful in business or in nonprofit or almost any other professional space in which you find yourself.
The second channel I think I'd like to ask you about is, it takes a while to right the ship when it comes to human behavior. Talk to me about your lessons that you gained along the way in the process of staying the course. What was that like for you as you rebuilt relationships?
I think my first and naive assumption was that this was going to be a quick fix.
Huh.
But it wasn't. And it took me the better part of, like I said earlier, 4 or 5 years to really right the ship and to feel confident in my own skills. So I read Dale Carnegie's book, The Tried and True, How to Win Friends and Influence People, which the book, spoiler alert, is all about listening. It's just this all about that people need to be heard, want to be heard. And then if you become the listener in the room, a lot of times you're going to have influence without even knowing it, because you are connecting with people in a really real way. So I read books like that, and I looked at anything that would help me form a basis for my own style. How was I going to handle that? I think you and I talked the other day about a meeting I was in, and this was at a company where diplomacy was extremely important. And I could have never done that job if I hadn't been through this experience prior. And the person, it was a room of 20 people, and there was an individual at the table, and he kept coming after me about a certain topic. And I knew the answer from our governing body that it was not as he was painting the picture. And I, in deference to him and not wanting to embarrass him in front of a room full of people, I backed off, or I hit the tennis ball back a couple of times. And then finally, I said to him, I said, this is the third time that you've asked me about this. And so I've been a corner now. And so I have to be honest with you about where the organization is going on this particular matter. And I tried to be as diplomatic as I possibly could and to make it short so that this would not in any way berate this person. It definitely took a lot of work on myself to get to the point where I could handle that situation.
Yeah, it sounds like you read a lot. You probably tried some things and they might not have felt like they were a comfortable shoe while you were trying the new things. Maybe sitting there listening. What was it like to sit there and listen in meetings where you might have always before been the speaker upper? What was that like?
Yes. And I was always very verbal. So I always wanted to talk and be heard. And
you're getting a twinkle in your eye as you remember those moments.
Oh, yeah. And I think one of the really important things about being a good listener is that you're not leaping ahead in your mind to think about what you're going to say in response to the person. And that takes a lot of discipline, and it takes continual reminder to yourself to really hone in on what this person is saying and to digest it. People can tell. They can tell when your eyes are flitting around the room versus when you are making eye contact with them. You are 100% captured by what they're saying, and you have a response that's meaningful.
You gave a great example of how you've taken your directness and your diplomacy into a room under high stakes in this company that had this person that really just was pushing, and you found a way to be concise, direct, and respectful. What are some other ways that your skills of diplomacy and directness and listening have propelled you forward in your career today? You mentioned that this incident, it was 30 years ago. So tell me how this has served you.
I think one thing has to do with discernment. I use that word a lot. Because some things are worth pursuing and thinking about and really pondering and coming up with a good solution. And some things, it's better to just let them go. So the key, I think, especially as you become a more senior leader, the key is to be able to know which is which. And one of the things that, because I do a lot of coaching with individuals around communication skills, and at one point, I had a woman who was close to me and a consummate professional. She had a difficult exchange at work, big company, a lot at stake. And she went on and on about how this person had rubbed her the wrong way and it didn't go well. And she was going to do, and she was going to write, and she was going to email and all this stuff. So finally, after I had listened to all this and there was a pause, I said to her, "You will do nothing. You will do nothing until you have slept on this at least two nights and you've had a chance to get that emotion, right, a little bit under control so that your professional acumen is what's driving your response and not the emotional part."
Now, you have the capacity to be discerning.
Exactly. Yeah. And I want to caveat that this is a person who's very close to me. So I was able to be really direct.
Give her the tough love.
Yeah. But I find that when I can, helping people to figure out, okay, this isn't that important, let's let it go. Or, wow, there are a lot of other outcomes that depend on this decision, and we really have to get our game where it needs to be. I think that's an important ability to be able to pull those two things apart and figure it out. And also, too, I think democracy doesn't work often with teams. And I've seen it many times, and it just, if you have seven people on the team and everyone has to unanimously want something in order to move forward, that's a nice thing to have, but it's a little bit unrealistic often. And unless you're in an autocratic kind of environment where somebody can just make a decision, it almost has to be the kind of dialogue where okay, what can we collectively live with, but also what's best for the business and where do we need to take this next? So I think the other thing about communication is in the beginning, it's just about you and how you are communicating and listening. Later on, it becomes about decision-making in teams and then leading the team and being able to figure out the complexity of those feelings and the complexity of what they're communicating and so forth. And that's definitely a skill.
In a way, this is the story of moving from it's all about you as an early career professional yes. wanting to communicate what you had to say because you were direct and good and got stuff done to, wait a second, we're moving forward together. And that yes. takes listening and that takes engaging and that takes using discernment yeah. and sometimes taking the tough stand.
That's right. Oh, absolutely.
If you were to give advice to somebody 15 years, maybe 20 years, your junior, coming up in communications and human resources as a leader in general in an organization that highly values getting stuff done and being diplomatic, what would you say to them?
I think that the first thing is, again, not to repeat, but going back to the discernment idea is, I think that's an important skill for those of us who execute in kind of a really driving kind of way and being able to say, okay, I'm running for the end zone, but the rest of the group doesn't even know that I've left the line. And so that's super important.
Calibrating with the rest of your team a little bit, eh?
Exactly. So much so. I think also helping people to understand that, and I heard it, an Army officer shared this with me once, and it was that really in life, so many instances of conversation or a project you work on or whatever is a blade of grass. It's just a blade of grass in the lifetime. And it's a small thing. Realizing the small versus the large things and then communicating in a way that's always diplomatic, always warm. The more you can genuinely care about people, I think the better off you are in leadership and diplomacy.
I love it. So calibrating with others as you move forward towards the goal, taking perspective. Sometimes the things that seem really big deals today are just a blade of grass in your colleague's words.
Blade of grass. Yeah.
And last, the biggest one, I think, is really care about people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this seems so many times in personality testing, I go back to Myers-Briggs. It's just an oldie, but a goodie. And what I love about that personality test is that it helps people to understand each other in terms of whether people are focused on facts or whether they're intuitive and they have emotion is driving them more and so forth. And I use this sometimes in group coaching because the best question you can ask with this particular scenario and tool is, how do you handle stress in light of what we've talked about with this personality test? And what would you tell the other person in your team to expect and how to work with that when it happens?
What a great thing to ask someone
sure.
that you work with.
It is one question. And by the time you're done with the team building, the conversation's been an hour and 15 minutes. And the reason is, I think that people handle that stress and that emotion in a different way, each in a different way. And that if you just understand that what's going on with this person right now is not leveled at you, it's just their way of seeing the world.
In a stressful moment. Yeah.
At a stressful moment, suddenly your communication skills can go right up because you're able to have caring for that person and meet them where they are.
Beautifully said. I think meeting them when they are. And that's a true caring moment that can really help someone to grow like this boss helped you to.
Yes.
As people listen to this and say, hey, I want to pick Jenny Bodian's brain about having discernment or about slowing down and realizing it doesn't have to be done right now, where can they find you?
It's super easy. My coaching email address is jenny@jenniferbodian.com. So it's a pretty easy one.
We'll put that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, I think that's best because One thing that is helpful with email, as we all know, is it gives you a minute to think about things before you reply. And I think that's helpful always for me, since the world for me and for everyone else is running at a breakneck pace. So reach out to me by email and let's chat.
Wonderful. Jenny, it's been such a pleasure to have this time with you. And thank you so much for sharing a messy moment, because we all have them. We just don't all feel brave enough to talk about them. And I think that brings us closer as people and professionals. So thank you. A couple of things that really stood out to me today really are the power of discernment and meeting someone where they are when it's time to share feedback. If your boss hadn't done that for you and met you where you were, and it could have been very different for somebody completely different, you may not have ended up on this podcast today sharing this great advice based on all the years of learning that you've had along the way. So thank you, Jenny, for spending time helping us to understand how to be discerning and meet people where they are so we can get results and be direct and diplomatic all at once.
Thanks so much, Alexa. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So if you like this episode of Transformation Unfiltered, I encourage you to subscribe. You can find us on any podcast platform. Please like this episode and don't hesitate to listen to more Transformation Unfiltered from great leaders who have been there, done that, and hit fast forward on their careers.
Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you've found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you, who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.